This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to transactional banking with simple, transparent fees.
Well, it's Thursday, the 6th of February, and this is your BizNews briefing. We start with President Trump's recent comments on Elon Musk. Trump was holding a press conference in Washington, and he was asked about Musk's access to sensitive documents in Washington. This is what he had to say.
Well, he's got access only to letting people go that he thinks are no good if we agree with him, and it's only if we agree with him. He's a very talented guy from the standpoint of management and costs, and we put him in charge of seeing what he can do with certain groups and certain numbers. The numbers, some of the numbers are horrible, what he's found. 100 million dollars on condoms to Hamas. Condoms to Hamas. And many other things that are frankly even more ridiculous. And they're finding tremendous waste, really waste. More than anything else, I think you could say. Probably fraud and abuse can be added to it. The more standard waste, fraud, and abuse. But they're finding tremendous amounts of really bad things, bad spending. You've been reading about, you've been writing about some of it, frankly, and some of the things that they've been doing is just terrible. Elon can't do and won't do anything without our approval. And we'll give him the approval where appropriate. Where not appropriate, we won't. But he reports in, and it's something that he feels very strongly about. And I'm impressed because he's running, obviously, a big company. Has nothing to do if there's a conflict that we won't let him get near it. But he does have a good natural instinct. He's got a team of very talented people. We're trying to shrink government, and he can probably shrink it as well as anybody else, if not better. Where we think there's a conflict or there's a problem, we won't let him go near it.
I spoke to Magda Wierzyczka, who is the co-founder and CEO of Signia Limited. She's also one of South Africa's wealthiest women and is well known for her anti-corruption stance in terms of activism. I asked her what she thought about Elon Musk's level of power.
Looking at Elon Musk, the fact that he's South African means that he can never run for the presidency of United States. In fact, he can't run for any office. So he has done everything in his power to come as close to being president and as he possibly can. So he, for all intents and purposes, he's president by proxy. And that is what you are seeing. The problem with Elon Musk is that, you know, he's completely unpredictable and he doesn't care. He is the richest man in the world. He does not care. He will do things as he, you know, sees fit. And I think, you know, what has been a bit of a tragedy is the fact that, you know, he acquired Twitter. Twitter has become his megaphone. And as a consequence, of course, of various actions, he's taken, advertisers fled, well, before now. And people who were left behind were right-wing nutters. And hence, people who became his following as a consequence are the right-wing nutters. That is who is, you know, spurring him on. And I think you're seeing that coming out in him. You know, he's pandering to his audience and his constituency.
So we are in the news headlines for the wrong reasons right now. We've got Ramaphosa going up against Trump on the expropriation bill. And I'm not sure this is a war we want to take on in terms of South Africa versus the US versus Trump. Again, Magda, it brings too many elements to the fore around our allegiances and companies that, countries rather, that we have aligned ourselves with that are not favored by the US. So this could be the start of much bigger trouble for South Africa.
I think it's trouble for the world, because I think what is happening is that you can't but take sides. And you are going to, you know, this concept of South Africa being neutral and that's what we say, of course, not what we do, is out the window. You actually do have to take sides. It's either East or the West. And that will dictate access to trading markets. It will dictate, the tariffs that might be imposed. And I think, the world has now, it's not an issue will, gradually, it's an issue of has become completely polarized. So, you've seen Trump taking pot shots at, I think Australia is the only continent, well, Antarctica, that he hasn't picked on. Because we've had Denmark, we've had Panama, we've had China, Mexico, Canada, South Africa. I'm struggling to see, how many more? And so, we can't but take sides. And of course, we are visibly seen to be part of BRICS. And I don't know that that is the wisest choice that we can possibly make.
Staying with Elon Musk, BizNews' Chris Stane spoke to Davy Brewitt from the Efficient Group and asked him to what extent he believes that Elon Musk is the hand behind the throne.
Not only him. Even before Elon Musk, there were a number of senators in the US, Cruz, for example, is one. Which did put pressure on the previous administration to reconsider the relationship between South Africa and the United States. So it's not only Musk. I think Musk, there are two issues when it comes to Musk. One is, of course, he's an ex-South African. So I guess he's got a bit of a slightly better insights into what's going on in South Africa. And he's, of course, influencing Donald Trump on South Africa. But secondly, Elon Musk is an entrepreneur. He's a guy that is known to really gut companies, to cut back cost in companies, and to run companies very, very efficiently. And I think that's an ideological position that he has. And Donald Trump, of course, shares that. And that's why he's been made the head of the so-called Dodge Department that is supposed to streamline the civil service in the United States. And he's running that like he's running all other companies as well. So it's not only his connection to South Africa, it's also an ideological connection that he has with Donald Trump. And there are many other people agreeing with that. I think a very good example is Javier Milei of Argentina, also following that same kind of approach, which in itself is not necessarily bad, because the reality is governments and states internationally have been getting bigger and bigger. And we need to cut back on governments. Governments are just far too big, and including in South Africa. So it's not only all bad, but certainly in the case of Elon Musk, I think that he's got a special interest in South Africa for coming from South Africa. And that certainly influenced Donald Trump as well.
Staying with this theme, Alec Hogg, BizNews' editor, had a very interesting conversation with Corné Mulder, who is the Freedom Front Plus chief whip in Parliament. And he asked him how Afrikaners feel about Trump.
Why are the Afrikaner people generally so supportive of Donald Trump? And I know that's a heck of a statement, but pretty much everywhere I go, when I talk to my friends who are from the voorouders as Afrikaners, they love Donald Trump. They kind of can relate to the man. Why is that?
I think there are, well, let me first say this. Obviously, people will differ and one can give your opinion in terms of many things that may not be acceptable with regard to the individual person on a personal level for whatever, and that's a different discussion. But when it comes to positioning in terms of policy, in terms of his approach, people, Afrikaner people, many of them feel absolutely aligned and inclined with him. Why? First of all, he speaks directly. That's a typical Afrikaner trait. We don't go around the bush. We speak truthfully, directly. This is what we think. This is what we stand for. Donald Trump is doing that. He's saying that. He's not being politically correct. And I think Afrikaner people are sick and tired in this country of the political correctness and the wokeness. That's the second thing. Thirdly, I think the fact that he comes out and says America first, no one should be as interested in your own affairs as a people or a country should be themselves. If Afrikaner people think that somebody will come from abroad, the Pope or whoever, and say, you've got a problem, we will solve it. It's not going to happen. You have to take responsibility for yourselves. That is what Trump says. I focus on my own people, what is the values, and what is important for us. And I think we Afrikaner people are associating with that. They feel it's a strong, direct message. He's doing what he's going to do. And that focus on what is important for the American people first, I think we can relate to that.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
President Cyril Ramaphosa presents the State of the Nation address this evening. And I spoke to Kevin Lings, the chief economist at Stanlib, and asked him what he believes the president could do that would have an immediate positive impact on South Africa.
The IMF has actually done a lot of work on South Africa in the last couple of weeks. They've released some comprehensive documents that have looked at some of South Africa's strengths and weaknesses. And obviously, there's a focus right now on some of the shortcomings and what South Africa needs to do in order to lift growth. So a lot of this discussion around South Africa simply rests on how do you improve the growth outcome of the country? Because if you can lift the growth rate, then a lot of the problems start to go away from a government's perspective. So the IMF is one of the things they're saying is that our level of regulation on business is extremely high. In fact, they produce a report that shows a list of 47 countries. Those countries include all of the major developed economies, but they also include quite a wide range of emerging markets that we would typically be compared against. So countries like Mexico or Brazil or Chile or Indonesia, all of those countries are also on the same list. And what it shows is that South Africa's level of regulation on business is the worst out of all of those 47 countries. And that data relates to 2023. Now, that's saying quite a lot. And if you've got a very high level of regulation, it stifles business. It stops business being willing to invest, to expand. It stops business willing to employ. And most importantly, it hinders the productivity of business. And if business is not productive, then they're not competitive. And that makes life very difficult. So the suggestion, quite simply, and it's not a new suggestion, but the data highlights the importance of the suggestion, and that is simply deregulate business, but deregulate it in a way that is fairly comprehensive. That is not simply deregulation at the margin, a little bit here and a little bit there. But you've got to go from being the worst out of 47 countries to something that's more or less middle of the pack. Now, the IMF did some studies on what that would do if we could go halfway. Think about this, halfway between where we are now and the middle point. So not even getting to the middle point, just go halfway between worst position and the middle position, and that would add 0.5% to South Africa's GDP growth on an annual basis. Now, that's significant if you consider that at the moment we're growing at less than 1%. So by simply deregulating the business environment, even just modestly, it would improve South Africa's economic growth. And so that's what I think the State of the Nation should highlight. It should embrace the idea that there's a partnership with business, make it easier to do business. Everybody benefits from that. And we've seen that around the world. South Africa's not unique. When you deregulate, business flourishes.
I also asked Magda what she would say to Cyril if she had his ear ahead of the State of the Nation address.
I think that, you know, I would listen to the panel of economists that he had put together, some of the leading minds in South Africa. Listen to them. Listen to the policies that, you know, they are putting forth as growth policies for South Africa. Because unfortunately, you know, top minds in the country apply their minds to this, to economic growth, to, you know, looking at poverty, looking at unemployment. But as much as these forums are put together and they put together policy papers, the policies are not implemented. So one is listen to the economists, your own economists that you have collated in a panel. You know, the chairman of Signia, Professor Harun Barat, is part of that panel. Listen to business. You know, you for the first time, I mean, again, we've had years of business engaging with government, but it's not really engaging with government. It's engaging with ANC and their perspective. Listen to business. And yes, you know, business is transactional. Business is commercial. They want to make money. But business in South Africa will only make money if South Africa is prosperous. Engage with business and be, you know, genuine and honest about it, as opposed to smiling and nodding your head and then, you know, going off to your farm. Listen to the economy. Listen to business. There are growth strategies that we can put on the table. You know, there's more. If we stop the nonsense with BRICS and aligning ourselves so visibly and taking photographs with Putin, maybe fewer photo ops and more domestic focus.
Well, Zimbabwe's biggest trade partner is now the United Arab Emirates, and that's after a direct attempt by Zimbabwe to woo the region. $1.4 billion has been invested in various sectors across the Zimbabwean economy since 2022. Our partners at Bloomberg have the lowdown.
Bloomberg's Andiro Oganga is on the story and joining us now. So, Andiro, talk about why the UAE is attracted to Zimbabwe, especially when we look at a lot of other countries that have essentially shunned the country going forward.
Hi, Jen. So what attracted the UAE to Zimbabwe is their gold, which has become a bright spot in their local economy. And the genesis of this relationship is in 2019, Zimbabwe's president went to the UAE for a roadshow to try and attract investment into their country. It was a time when the economy was literally on a freefall. They'd been locked out of the capital markets due to sanctions. They defaulted on their debt and also years of misrule from their previous administration. And we're beginning to see this partnership bear green shoots. Dubai Gold and Commodity Exchange have made a pact with Zimbabwe to establish a gold market. Then you have Bluefin Gold Group, which is a miner that it's planning to set up in the country, and also a $60 billion cyber smart city that is being set up to replace the current capital city, Harare, that is in ruins. If you also look at UAE, they're part of top five foreign direct investment sources for Zimbabwe. So the relationship is bearing fruit that Zimbabwe would have liked to see, but experts are also saying that this is not going to be enough. This is an economy that is crashing under the weight of debt, legacy infrastructure issues, unstable currency, and they need more than inflows from the UAE to stabilize their economy.
Well, when we talk about this partnership, does this do more for the UAE potentially in gaining influence across the African continent, especially when you look at some of the other Gulf players that are trying to do the same?
It does, and they're doing it one country at a time. If I take you back to last year, Egypt, where they were able to invest a total of $35 billion at a time when nobody was willing to give Egypt money or bail them out of the economic crisis that they were going through at the time. And this amount is almost 7% of the total annual economic output from EU. And someone close to the matter told Bloomberg that they're willing to invest more of this amount if the opportunity presents itself. We are seeing an influx of Emirati money onto the African continent. $110 billion have been invested so far in areas of trade, infrastructure, food, logistics. And this comes at a time when China is scaling back on its financing on the African continent. EU is scaling back its presence. And you have US that is putting America first under Donald Trump. But it's also important to say, while diplomatic relations are very important in trying to build influence, there's massive prospects of profit because UAE is daring invest in countries that many are not trying to touch.
Well, that brings us to the end of today's BizNews briefing. We'll be back on Monday with more context from both the local and global front.
This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to finance solutions that enable real growth.